I'll just echo that. You know, a lot of you know a little bit about warbirds and the people who fly them, and I said from the get-go, flying a DC-3 across the North Atlantic was a pretty straightforward operation, and it turned out to be an incredibly easy thing. We flew the same airplanes on the same route to the same destination as the kids did 75 years ago, and what we did had nothing in common with what they did. We had 50,000 hours of flight experience in our cockpit. They were lucky to have 500. We had a bucket full of GPSs. They had a brand new navigator fresh out of nav school looking through a star dome in the top of the airplane. We had three different computer weather models that we were comparing in the weeks and months leading up to this to get comfortable with the weather, and it was dead accurate. We knew where the ice was, and but more importantly, we knew where it wasn't. And we went into Nasarsarac with absolute certainty that we were turning up the right fjord to get to that destination, because if they made the wrong decision, they ended up in the rocks. And so while we imitated what they did, it had nothing in common with the courage that it took for those kids to launch off from Goose Bay to Nasarsarac, on to Reykjavik, and then Prestwick, Scotland. So it was an incredible trip. And I'll echo what John said about Eric. Again, these 15 groups of people that are passionate about their airplanes and the missions that we tell often have opinions. And while I said it was a fairly easy technical thing, managing, I said it was a psychological experiment it was going to turn out to be, managing the egos of all these people. And Eric's leadership managed that so well, and we came together as an incredible team and got to know some people that'll be just lifelong friends. And 15 groups of people that spent 2 years getting their airplanes ready raised $150,000 to $250,000. That sorts out to a pretty high class of people, and I was just honored to be a part of it.
Wow. Eric, your ears burning in there?
Yeah, my ears are burning. Thank you, guys. My job was made a whole lot easier by those 15 teams. You know, one of the most important things that came of this, in addition to honoring the veterans and honoring the events, was really showing that we can bring, you know, disparate groups of warbird operators and even civilian aircraft operators together, and it's really a great template for the future to keep the aircraft flying. Going across the Atlantic, as Doug described, we left the Northeast. We went to Presque Isle, Maine, and then on to Goose Bay, Newfoundland. From there, most of the aircraft went to Narsarsuaq in southern Greenland, and then Reykjavik, and ultimately Prestwick, Scotland. There were a couple airplanes, because of weather and because they had a little bit more range, went all the way up to Sondastrom near Thule, Greenland, and were able to continue the flight that way. But as Doug said, it's the same geographic points, but our job was made a whole lot easier by 75 years worth of technology.
Yeah. There's one other person that needs credit for this. Eric located a young Coast Guard helicopter pilot up in Alaska named Kevin Riley. And Kevin volunteered to help us with logistics. And he too was an amazing leader. And he brought a professionalism and a confidence. And he went and did research on DC-3s. You know, when we were talking about immersion suits, I said, I'd rather have a 9mm. The result's the same and it's quicker. But he did research and found that the C-47 is really an incredibly seaworthy airplane, and he had lots of examples of airplanes that were successfully ditched in the open ocean, to the point where he had a picture of three guys standing in the door with a raft right there waiting for the airplane to sink to step in the raft. And he assured us if we got in the raft, the Coast Guard would be there to get us. Wow. And that added a lot of confidence to us in this mission. And so Kevin Riley, and he was with us for almost a month, took leave, and I think the Coast Guard matched some of his leave because they figured it was better to have us have some adult supervision than go on our own.
You know, just a slight interruption. The Coast Guard doesn't get nearly the recognition and respect that it is due every day, every night, around this country and around the world. Just take 2 seconds and let's hear it for the U.S. Coast Guard. Ed.
I'd like to get back to Normandy for a few minutes.
Okay. We're getting there.
I know that's old stuff to you people, but I'd like to tell you how I'm here. I think I told you a few moments ago that I was in charge of making the sand tables, and I was told by my commanding officer, the battalion commander, to stay at the tent where the sand table was for the last minute for anyone to know where they were when they hit the ground at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. They said, wait until the last moment. They will send a jeep to pick me up. They did. I got to the plane. I was on number one plane of 47 planes of the battalion. The commanding officer, who respected me quite a bit because I knew what I was doing, I worked very hard at my job. No big deal. I was supposed to. Anyhow, he was at the door. And I was getting ready to put my stuff on. The stuff was on the ground, parachute, everything else that I was going to jump with. He said, Shames, there's a correspondent that's sitting in your seat next to me, and you're going to be assigned to a different airplane. Well, I was very disappointed because I usually sat next to the colonel when I jumped because he depended on me quite a bit of where we were and what we were doing. No big deal. That was my job. I was not smarter, brighter than anyone else, but that was my job, and I did my job well. I wanted to do it. So anyhow, I was nervous as hell. We were getting ready to get our tail shot off in Normandy, and there I was in the middle of nothing. So he said, go to so-and-so plane. Today, I still don't know what plane I was on. Nobody has a manifest to show the plane that I was on. I can't even prove that I jumped into Normandy. But anyhow, the jeep took me to this airplane, and of course I was nervous, so was everybody else, I think, unless they were crazy as hell. Anyhow, the jump master said, Shames, you get into the back of the plane, which actually was the front of the plane, and when the light goes on, the green light, start pushing and get everybody out. He knew who I was, and I knew who he was, but that was it. I didn't know the plane I was on. It was dark. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. So we took off. We were ready to go right then. So when we got over Jersey and Guernsey, in the middle of the channel, we got flak, but it was too far away from a plane to make any effective use of it at all. So nothing hurt us. And we got across the channel, right on the mainland, and all hell broke loose. If you've ever been to a ocean view area like amusement park, night of fireworks, that's what it looked like. Stuff was all over the place. So we ran, and of course, when the pilot saw all of this stuff, they moved around, and I don't blame them. Of course, if I were in the cockpit, I would have done the same damn thing.